Sorry. Friday night. Theme music. No, not really. Bullshit.
We're getting real intimate here on Friday night.
Welcome to Granny's Peach Tea on a Friday night.
Granny's After Dark.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Granny's Peach Tea, episode 142 for those who are counting. And yep, it's a Friday night. You got some three married guys in their 40s. They're going to talk about a comic book show that dropped this week. That's pretty much what it is.
Here we are.
And here we are. That's that way it. Yes, it's pretty straightforward. That's what we do, you know, now that we're at right now. But no, we appreciate it as always. Thanks for joining us. If you're joining us on the Facebook live stream, joining us on YouTube or X or wherever you found your audio only podcast, we always appreciate the support. Yep. We got our spoiler review for Marvel Studios Echo that dropped on Tuesday. And since they dropped the entire season in one shot, we're going to talk about the entire season in one shot just as well. So that's how we're going to go about it. You have been warned, it is a spoiler review. But as always, with me is Jason. Jason, what's up? What's going on?
How's it going? Good to be here on this Friday at Granny's After Dark. Man, I'm just easing on in here, guys. We're all getting comfortable together. It's a Friday after dark.
And also with us,
nah, things are good, man.
Yeah, what's up? Oh man, these Friday shows seem to get a little crazy. I remember, I'm just thinking back to some of the other ones when we were, you know, the Justice League one. I think we got into it and we came up with the song of Invisible Mustache from Invisible Touch.
We get punch drunk and drunk on these Friday episodes. You know, I mean, fair enough. It's the weekend, baby.
Rick, what's going on, man? What's going on with you?
What's going on, fellas? I'm happy to be here for GAD. Little Granny's After Dark action. I'm all about it. There's no Friday Night Knicks, so I will be the Friday Night Nick.
Okay. Nice. I'm gonna finish sharing this thing out here because I wish there was a better way to do this, but
yeah, there should be some.
I feel a little underdressed though. I didn't wear a tie today, Eddie. You didn't let me know that there was a dress code. Like, to GAD.
Actually, I'm gonna show you this. This is not just any tie. This is a tie of me and my son dressed as nice. Batman and Spider-Man.
That is fucking awesome. I did not know that.
That was my Father's Day gift this Father's Day. Because my wife knows I love this shit. And I wear ties every day to work. Like, why I have this on is because I, you know, came straight from happy hour after work. So it's superhero theme, man. It's on brand.
Nice. Well, I mean, come on. I was definitely going to throw. I was not going to do it at first. And I'm like, nah, I got to take the opportunity to throw in a Daredevil shirt. Being that we're talking about Echo, I mean, come on.
Nice.
That was a given. All right, so before we do jump into it, though, let's just remind everybody, during the broadcast, you can support our page by sending some stars, which is a digital gift that helps us earn some money for Pop Culture Bros. So come on, hang out, and let's talk about it. Let's get in right into it, because this is it. There's no movie. We got the whole season, as you had mentioned. We're talking about Echo that dropped on Disney Plus and Hulu this past Tuesday night at 9, which I'm going to drop that spoiler ticker across the bottom because, yes, we are talking full spoilers on this episode. So if you have not seen Echo in its entirety and you've not seen all 5 episodes, then come check us out another time because we're probably going to jump around a little bit. We'll try to stay on course, but I'm sure it's going to be a free, wide-open conversation. So there is that. Yeah, so now that that's out of the way, yes, Tuesday night at 9, which was to Rick's demise that morning because he was up with his daughter and he was all hyped up, right, Rick? Were you ready to watch Echo and it wasn't there?
5 a.m. Jason, she's starting to get teeth now, so she's waking up at these early hours. 5 a.m. My solace was, you know what? I'm going to bring her to the living room. I'm going to give her a bottle. I'm going to put Echo on. And by the time I got to log into work, I would have watched the whole season.
Wow. And then he would have texted me in the morning, like towing the line of spoilers, and I'm gonna be like, Rick, leave me alone. I'm not getting to see it yet, man.
But Mephisto.
Exactly.
I mean, Mephisto is all over this episode.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so it dropped on Disney Plus and Hulu, and, you know, the marketing was all about, you know, you got to set your Disney Plus rating to mature and all this other stuff that's on there. Apparently, mine was already there. I don't really need to adjust anything because I did go in just to make sure. So I have Disney Plus and not Hulu. And I guess I was kind of good to go with that one. And yeah, this show is marketed as Marvel's Spotlight. I just wanted to talk about the marketing to start off with, because it was under, this is the first Marvel Spotlight show or project that we've gotten. And that's basically the MCU's way of saying, hey, all the fans that seem to be somewhat disenchanted in the fact that, oh, I haven't watched the last year or whatever, last some-eyed episodes of all the shows, I'm not caught up, can I watch this? No, you can jump in and you can watch this show without having seen anything prior to it. I think that's a good starting off point for the first episode, because that is a fact. I mean, they spend the first episode is what, 48 minutes?
And I think it's the longest one out of all of them.
Probably because they had a recap in the first 15, 20 minutes, catching you up on Hawkeye and Daredevil.
15% of it was the last episode of Hawkeye.
Basically, all right. So I'm not bugging out here. They start off then, in an interesting
the
way.
The first 8 minutes were an episode of Stargate that somehow ended up on my on my MCU show. I sat there for the first 5 minutes. And I looked at my wife and I was like, is this the right thing? I was like, this doesn't look like a Marvel show. It looked like Stargate Atlantis. It really threw me off in the beginning.
Oh, okay. You're talking about like the point where...
I'm talking about the absolute beginning of the first
episode. Okay, yeah. So the episode one starts off with, you know, we basically meet where we find out to be Maya's... ancestors, because, you know, there's a lot of that in the series, but we don't really know what's going on at that point. And we meet them and we're kind of like, what the heck is going on here? And it's the Choctaw, you know, tribe that she's from, and, you know, her family's from, and they're part of. And that's kind of what we're getting, kind of like the origin of that. And then it goes into a pretty long recap, right? There's a recap that goes on. It's not spelled out for you, but it's made to look like this is the show, of peppered in shots of Hawkeye, anything that had to do with Echo in there, and also Daredevil. So that was what's peppered in during this recap. And the recap reminded me very much of like an 80s movie sequel, where they spend the first 15 minutes of the movie basically rehashing what you need to know going up to it, which can be good and bad. The fact that they marketed this as a Marvel Spotlight project, though, I'm kind of going to give them kudos to it, because I don't think if you didn't watch Hawkeye or Daredevil and you were watching this for the first time, I thought it was pretty seamless. Jason, what did you think of the opening of the first episode, the kind of recap part?
I thought the recap part was fine. I think it addresses a lot of critiques that are laid upon the MCU right now and comic book movies in general. Like, there are no access points, right? Like, you know, you have to have watched this and that and the other thing. And this is a show where people could say, oh, I had to have watched Hawkeye to understand this. And so that 15-minute recap is for people who didn't watch Hawkeye, for people who had maybe your Echo stands who were not big in the other stuff, who were like, no, this is my entry point. And I can't imagine that being me, but I'm sure there are people who this could be their entry point. So I think it's a good thing that it gave that 15 minutes. I will say this, though. That is where Daredevil shows up, right? That's the only shot we get at Daredevil's.
No, we're not even there yet. No,
we're not even there yet. Okay.
No.
So then, yeah. So then the recap, fine. Absolutely fine. No complaints about it.
Okay, so you didn't feel... I didn't...
Can I tag something on to what Jason just said really quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
What he said for people that are just jumping on with Echo, you know who that could be? Deaf people that have never watched an MCU show or movie, have never had a reason to. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, Disney made this 5-episode series like just for you guys. It's a superhero series, even better. So... there's literally a whole percentage of humanity that might never have watched a Marvel movie or TV show that their friend might go, hey, they made this just for you. How about it? So that recap could be really important.
Well, no, I think if you are jumping in at that point, if this is your entry point into the MCU, if you just saw the trailers, which I feel like Disney had this trailer everywhere. Like if you're watching sports, you couldn't escape this trailer. The trailer was fire. I mean, whatever. We didn't even get into the show, but the trailer was really good. But yeah, if you saw that and you were like, hey, I don't know what the heck this is, but I'm going to go check it out. They do a good job of peppering in, I had mentioned, scenes from Hawkeye, scenes from Daredevil, and some new footage to kind of make it look seamless, like this is what it is. You know, I thought it was well done there. Didn't feel it was clunky because I was kind of concerned once it started that that's what it was going to be like. But I understood why it was there, so I really had no issues with that. But then they do go into like through that, and that's why I think it's kind of seamless. Is we get Maya's background that we haven't seen, and that's where they establish. Where Fisk, Wilson Fisk, who is Kingpin, he goes ahead and why he trusts Maya, and they dive more into the relationship. And then that's when we get what I think is the best action sequence the MCU has had in a bit, at least Disney Plus related, because that's when we get the one, Jason, you were talking about where... Basically, Fisk sends Maya on her first mission, per se. And I was reading an article with the director, and I wanted to just share this with you guys, that he was talking about how this is how, she mentions that this is how Maya is shown. She goes in kind of very green, like very, you know, doesn't really know what's going on, kind of like, a young girl. She goes into this scene as, and it's this one shot long fight scene that goes on. And she, by the end of it, she has killed somebody already. She has gone toe to toe with Daredevil, who fucking shows up. Like he's not there to get her. And I kind of feel like, but she goes toe to toe with him. And at the end of that, she's like, you know, an experienced, you know, woman at this point. So I thought that was a very interesting perspective. There's a lot to unwrap in this one fight scene. Jason, what were your thoughts on this whole thing, on this perspective?
I mean, I liked the fight scene. I did like this sort of view of her trial by fire, and she goes in one way and comes out the other. I did like that. And I thought the seeing Daredevil in the silhouette was awesome. Like, because I do love that Daredevil show, and that Daredevil show was just canonized, right? Well, not just. I mean, that Daredevil show is canonized, but the rest of the stuff is just kind of been hinted at as canonized, right? On the on Disney.
Well, they've never like really officially, like Kevin Feige has never come out and said stamped can, like this is the sacred timeline, is what it's being referred to. Now it is. All right. Of the Defenders saga all in now.
Right. Now it is. And especially with some of the stuff we get in with Wilson Fisk later on in the series that we'll get to, like that kind of shows it's canonized. So I thought it was cool to see Daredevil. My only critique of that scene is it's the only thing we see of Daredevil, and God, did it not set me up to think we were going to see him again. It didn't. That's my only critique of the scene, because it made me want more of him. But getting rid of that, I loved the idea that this was her fight against him, and it was a thing that gets Kingpin to kind of not just trust her, but respect her, because he already trusts her, but he respects her abilities. So yeah, I like that. I thought that worked.
Rick, as the top Daredevil fan in this group, what were your thoughts on the on this whole scene?
So I didn't know we were gonna get DD in the series.
Did you notice him in the trailers?
I didn't really watch the trailers. Saw the trailer. Oh, no. You know what? I knew he was in the series. He was in the series. I guess I didn't know he was going to be in the first episode. Okay. That, you know what I'm saying? Like, it more caught me by surprise.
Okay.
And the fact that, and, you know, I watch a lot of, I'll watch an episode and then I'll, a half hour episode, and then I'll watch like 2 hours of breakdowns on it. So, like, when he came out, I fucking lost my mind, and I found out that that's actually like a Frank Miller, like, comics accurate, like, cover, like, the way he, like, entered the scene. Mm-hmm. And then the whole fight. I like the new DD where he's a little more flippy, like, that we saw in She-Hulk. Okay. Where he's just got a little special effects to him, you know? Yeah,
I get you.
And the fact that he hit it with the billy club and it was, like, had the string on it and all that. I loved it. I'm just happy for the fact that we got him at all.
I'll say the choreography in that one shot fight scene that goes on for a minute, I thought was spectacular, and it was right there with anything we got in the Netflix. You know, I'll just refer to that as the Defenders saga, because that's what they have it labeled as on Disney Plus now. So that I thought was really cool, and it kind of gave me that feeling. It's like, oh, wait a second, we're back at that point now. Like, none of the MCU Disney Plus shows have really given me that feeling like we were back there. This series, at least definitely this scene, kind of felt like we were back in the Defenders saga era. And I loved it. It was almost like a warm blanket that they got to try on again.
My favorite thing.
Yes. I'm like, oh, shit. We're back here now. Okay. And I also think that it's interesting that, yeah, Fisk mentions that, oh, by the way, yes, and I think he kind of, you're like Jason said, she earns his respect because he says you're one of the only people that has held their own against him. Now, I also think Daredevil, I think it's pretty clear in there that Daredevil was not there to get her, so he kind of,
he definitely took it easy.
He held back. Not like he was jobbing to her, because he doesn't lose the fight. Yeah. But, and Fisk also, they reinstate that you just held your own. You didn't beat him or anything like that. But he was also like, he recognized you're not who I'm here for. You're not a villain. I'm going to kind of like just get through this with you. But she does brutally go after him. Like, her fighting style is pretty intense through a lot of that. And I also love seeing the red suit back again.
Yes.
Nice.
I did enjoy that as well.
The ketchup and mustard was all right, but
it was a cool nod. It was a cool nod to like the OG Daredevil suit. But
look, that was the perfect Daredevil suit to be in the She-Hulk.
Yes. Show. It's fine. Yeah, it's a little goofy. That's it. And you're like, all right, let's have some fun with it. And that's that.
While we're talking about colors, I recently learned that Spider-Man's outfit was originally black and red. The blue was highlights. And then what happened is over time, people thought the outfit was red and blue. And so they just turned it red and blue and turned the black.
That's awesome.
Into like the definition.
Interesting.
That's how Hulk ended up green. He was gray.
Yeah, that I've heard.
He just couldn't get a uniform gray. Yeah. So they just turned them green.
Jason, I want to touch on what you had mentioned too. I'm going to be honest with you. I had no expectations of seeing Daredevil again. I kind of noticed this. As soon as the fight starts, because of the trailers, I knew he was going to pop up at some point in this. And he does. And I was just kind of like, just because once I started seeing where the series was going, and once it leaves New York City, I was like, all right, Daredevil's not going to show up in Oklahoma.
No. As the show goes on, I know he's not showing up. What I'm saying is I was disappointed that they set us up for Daredevil and didn't bring it back.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. Because this show was the show is linked to Daredevil. It is linked to Hawkeye. Like, this is not a show that stands just on its own. It has all these links. And so when Daredevil kind of showed up, I kind of got excited. Like, because I knew Kingpin was going to be all over this. And mm-hmm. Kingpin, Daredevil are tied together. So that's why I didn't think Daredevil was going to be in every episode. I thought, oh, shit, maybe there'd be a payoff for this. And there wasn't. Okay. And, like, I'm not saying there should have been. I'm just saying I was disappointed. That's all.
Yeah, I think it was just mainly to establish where, like, Maya's fighting abilities were at. And it was kind of established as, like, a super badass, you know, moving forward.
What if he would have showed up at the barbecue like he did at the end of the Well, would that have meant that he banged Echo?
Is that yes, what he does? He just shows up at random women's barbecues and that's what it insists?
So, I want that season of Daredevil where he just shows up to different female characters in the MCU's barbecues to bang them.
And old Matty Murdock, he's a dirty dog.
Ooh, hey, really Storm. Listen, they haven't created Reed Richards yet, right? Let's get invisible.
Yeah, Matt Murdock, don't sleep on him. I mean, he gets around there.
Yeah. You sleep on him, he'll sleep with you.
All right, so then I kind of think that brings us to episode 2, because I feel like that's kind of what the establishing and catching everyone up was what episode 1 was about. And then we kind of get into episode 2, where it opens up with this lacrosse game that is in, you know, 1200 BC, and it's showing her family lineage. And this is kind of when the second time we see this at the opening of the series, and it's showing there's a lot of strategy behind it, and it's a pretty intense game that's going on there. And at that point, we don't really know, you know, I didn't know where, I mean, I know it was showing her ancestors and stuff, but I still didn't know fully why we were seeing this at that point, but it was pretty cool. And then we start meeting her family in Oklahoma, and her cousin Biscuits gets introduced. Biscuits. And I thought
not a stoner.
Yeah. At least they didn't show it. He definitely seemed like a stoner, but in one of his first scenes, though, there's a scene where he's talking in the store. We meet her uncle as well, or no, like the, I'm sorry, her grandma's like boyfriend. They don't really establish that they were married or not or anything.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure who that guy was, but I liked him. He's one of my favorite characters in this show.
No, he's really cool. But there's a Madripoor name drop. I don't know if you guys caught that. Biscuits.
Oh no, I didn't.
Yeah, it gets mentioned because they're talking to these customers that come into the store. And talking about, like, how, you know, if you're in here, you want, like, an authentic, you know, Choctaw, like, you know, feel and stuff. Not one of those, like, Madripoor knockoffs. And I was like, I was pretty much went DiCaprio. And they're like, ooh, that's it, the thing. He said the thing right there. Madripoor, there we go. Falcon and Winter Soldier, X-Men, let's go. So I thought that was cool to, like, establish it in, you know, into the universe. And We also get more of Maya's plan. So Maya pretty much goes to Oklahoma to kind of, she tells everyone, she kind of reconnects with part of her family, her cousin Biscuits. And she's there to basically, you know, put a bomb in a fucking train that's Fisk shipping. And we see that this is unfolding to be a revenge plot that's here. But she's trying to go ahead and she wants to, she, at this point, she also thinks that Fisk is dead. Right after the events of Hawkeye. And then we're going to go ahead and I'm going to send this bomb that's going back to New York to take out his basically his armory and everything like that. She's trying to take over his business because she thinks he's dead. So whoever's running it, that's kind of her game plan. This is another great set piece, I thought, that's going on here with the train scene. What did you guys think?
I love the train. When she jumped off of it, and such a, like, iconic shot.
Yeah, that was a really cool shot.
Like, the whole scene, her fighting her way through, I thought was awesome. It looked good, too. Like, you could tell it was on a sound stage, but it looked good. But that leap from the train to the car, that was worth it. That was awesome.
Jason?
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought the action was really nice. It was a great set piece. And it really shows, like, her ability, right? Like, she gets on that train and she fucking, she busts some ass. And I think that's awesome. Like, seeing what she's capable of in this context, I thought it was awesome.
And that's also where we get the idea that she there's a scene during this train scene where she goes in, she gets her leg. She, you know, remember she also has an amputated leg, that she goes in, she gets it caught into something, and then we see she kind of has this like vision of her ancestors and stuff. And that's when we first start to see it, and you see it kind of like goes through her, and she's able to kind of like get out of that situation. And you know, I think she fights a little bit further than that, but that's kind of where we start going. Her hands start getting these like swirly, glowing things going on. And this is the first time. Nice. you have that as well.
I'm going to try to turn my power on later.
Right, you got until the end of the episode. Otherwise, then we're done.
I'm going to go start hitting cars week. Like Street Fighter. When you like break the car in the bonus stage.
Yes. Where I love how somebody definitely left the car there and was just like, this is safe. I'm going to just leave this at the pierce and it's okay.
This will be fine.
But yeah, but that's the first time in either the Hawkeye series or in this series that we get the idea that Echo has powers. Now, she has powers in the comics, but they're totally different in this show. Now, briefly, her powers in the comics, to just the short version, she is like Taskmaster Light in the comics. She has this weird mimicking thing. She can mimic fighting styles and whatnot and things like that. And basically for the MCU, they're kind of like, no, we're going to definitely have like this whole thing with her ancestors echoing through time. And that's what we're going to play with that. Which I thought was way more interesting than her convoluted powers in the comics.
It fits in with a lot of the tropes that we currently got going on. I mean, yeah. Kamala Khan, her family, mm-hmm. a family member making her outfit. Like, how many have we had now? Like, it's yeah. in a bunch of the shows and movies where we have a family member or the person themselves making it.
Yeah, I like the fact that not all our superheroes can fight crime and then are also amazing tailors.
Right?
I mean, Peter Parker is now that we found out that he tailored his own suit at the end of No Way Home. But pretty much, you know, someone hooks them up with it, and that's fine here. And then episode 3 jumps off. It starts off as a silent movie, like an old school black and white silent movie, which I thought was really cool. I was really into this when it starts. As I'm like, all right, we're getting a different flavor in the beginning of each episode, so this is kind of cool. But it highlights the Light Horseman, and I always find out that some of Maya's ancestors were kind of like police that were there, and it tells the story of Tukal, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing some of the stuff. I'm doing my best to try to nail this without making it sound too crazy, but it's basically like the police at that time, and we see a group of them go out. They're trying to go ahead and solve stuff, and then one of her ancestors jumps in. She goes ahead, she gets herself into the fight. She stops it. She kind of saves the day there. And then we get a flashback to current time. And we also get an impressive another set of fight scene, which I thought was the two fight scenes that stand out for me are episode 1 and 3. Third episode, there's this big fight that goes on. Kingpin's men show up. There's a whole fight in like this roller disco that goes on here. And there's some impressive damage she does with some ski balls. In the scene. Go ahead, jump in. I'm throwing out to you guys. Any thoughts on this whole thing, on this fight scene and everything like that? Did we like it? Did we not like it?
So I I did a lot of hand waving with this series, and I really enjoyed it because I know that it was 6 episodes to begin with, and then studio interference made it 5. So I'm not going to, like, hit the writers, the directors, the actors. Like, I'm sure they would have rather done 6 episodes so things could have flowed better. This episode was, like, a departure from the rest of the series to come. I wish she would have like been stationed out of this roller rink. I wish that it would have turned a little more detective-y at this point. Because I loved this episode. It was a great episode. The atmosphere was awesome. Her uncle was cool. Bringing Bonnie, right?
Yes, Bonnie.
Finally bringing Bonnie into the mix and everything. The fight, the action in the fight was a lot of fun. I love this episode. It's probably my second favorite episode of all of them. And I wish they would have kept this up.
Okay. Jason?
I like the fight scene. I like the build up to the fight scene too, with because this the fight scene is because the guy who works for her uncle rats her out to the kingpin, right? Mm-hmm. And then he's got his two women who are, you know, it's kind of like watching Fargo. Like, have you ever seen the movie Fargo, where it's like people doing shit that they're way over their head for, and they think they've got it, and they don't. And that's kind of what like this guy and those two women remind me of. So I enjoyed that. I really like her uncle, and the fact that a roller rink or a like a skating rink, whatever the fuck it's called, is a setting in this, and her uncle owns this. I love that. I love that there's a fight scene based around that. So I thought that was cool. That was really visually fun to watch.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot of good stuff there. In this episode, she also gets her new leg because the other one was damaged in that train scene that I mentioned in the previous episode. So her, her grandmother's, ex-boyfriend is the shop owner, makes her this brand new leg. Looks pretty cool. It's a little, little loud for her taste. She even mentions that she's got to wear some pants over it and things like that. But it does come into play where, it's kind of like another weapon that she has throughout the series. And then at the end of the episode, though, we kind of get this thing where now the kingpin, Fisk, arrives, because that whole fight is stopped, where there's a phone call that comes in and people go, basically the dogs get called off. I mean, my mind immediately went to Fisk. I mean, I thought that was pretty obvious that's where this was going.
Same.
Yeah. And then he kind of just shows up at the end, and that's where the episode ended. And remember, I was telling you, I watched the first three episodes, and then I was like, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, all right, I got to get off work the next day. I got to stop this. But going to sleep, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, how did I can't stop right now. I mean, Fisk just showed up. Like, what the fuck?
I would have went one more.
I just didn't want to do it. I didn't want to be up until 2 a.m. Then, yeah, it just would have been a bitch. But this is kind of where I have some issues now with some of the storytelling in this. And before we get to like overall issues and things like that, we'll just keep touching on the next two episodes. All right. So Wilson Fisk, the last time we saw him in Hawkeye, and it is they go back to it in episode one. Maya shoots him in the face, right in the eye, and now he's back. Okay, he didn't die. We knew, right? Like, we talked about it back in our Hawkeye episode.
Dude, he just got hit by an explosive arrow. He can take a bullet to the face.
I'm just saying,
whatever. Let's use their science.
No, listen, fine. My issue with this, though, is when the bandage comes off. Bandage comes off.
No damage.
And he has pink eye.
It's a brief scar. Super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
I agree.
I had some issues
when he first pulled that bandage off, it looked like he was missing an eye, like, right? And I was like, oh, shit, that's cool. Wait, are they going to have a one-eyed kingpin? Then he was just like, no, I'm fine. I agree. That was weird.
Yeah, I thought that's one of my biggest gripes with this series, to be honest with you, in the writing of it. Like, I kind of feel like this is something you could have fixed fairly easily by just addressing it. You could have said, hey, MCU science hand wave, just mention that he went through some extensive stuff, got it replaced, You could have went with another eye. You could have went Last Action Hero style and had the glass eye in there if we want to.
Well, if they really wanted, they could have just written him a long monologue about how his father replaced his eye. And then, like, so when I was 10, my father replaced my eye. And then, like, the audience would be like, all right, again, another monologue of his father. All right, he's got his eye. Keep going.
Well, if we're going to do this, then it is... I was a boy.
My yes!
Eye. I don't know.
Was a boy. Yes.
In the comic books, it was kind of the same hand wavy. He was fine. Like, this isn't The Walking Dead. He's not going to be called.
No, no, no. It's...
No, I'm not saying we.
I'm just being a jerk.
Yeah,
you wanted a reason that he got better, not that she shot him in the face and he got pink eye.
No, that's the thing. I just want like some sort of an explanation of, and it could have been addressed in a line, or just a scene or something like that, where he could have been like, "Hey, I went through some extensive surgery. I got a shitload of money. We get it. Money cures all. Fine, and just something like that. I didn't want a one-eyed kingpin, really." Or you could add a glass eye and moved on with it. Just something. It was just very
he's gonna
much
look like a Bond hero. He's going to have a white suit with an eye patch. He's going to be a Bond hero.
I'm just saying.
I'm a rich white man with money. I'll fix the
I don't know, man. Like, it just kind of was
Elon
like.
Elon Musk thinks about that every day.
That's right.
It was very much a Palpatine Returns. Somehow.
Somehow, Kingpin gets his eye back.
Yeah, I don't know.
In the episode that they took out, it was all about her ancestry and Kingpin's eye.
Now I'm pissed.
This 20 minutes of Kingpin, like Kingpin's eye on the floor going, where's Kingpin? I've got to find him. And it's like Kingpin's eye, the journey home.
Oh. And so, then the night nurse picks it up. Sews it back in.
All's fine.
So episode Mario four
Dawson
is pretty much
dressed as Ahsoka.
Episode four pretty much goes around a lot of where Kingpin is there having the conversation with her, trying to say, "Hey, listen, you know, come back in. I know that what you want an empire. Come with me back to New York. You know, I trust you and everything like that." And we also get a lot of flashbacks that we did not see before. Especially this kind of like really intense scene that goes back to when Maya was a child, and it was
ice
a hot
cream
dog.
Man.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh, it was an ice cream. Yeah, maybe it was ice cream. That Kingpin's going to pick her up from school one day, and this guy is like mocking her, you know, telling her to use her words and shit. And Fisk gets out of his car, goes walks over and beats him to death. Right in front of, you know, in this alley in a broad daylight, but also makes a call like, "Hey, I need a new suit. I can't have Maya seeing me like this." But then he turns around and Maya's there, the child. Maya goes over, kicks the fucking guy who's already down, and grabs his hand, and they walk away. And it was very much a shot like an Infinity War with Gamora and Thanos walking. That's good. Rick, that's where
it's
you're
like poetry. It repeats itself.
Yeah. That was a phenomenal scene.
I got to admit, that's my favorite scene of the whole series. All five episodes, my favorite scene. Like from start to finish, where she walks up and she asks for the ice cream and she's pointing and the guy's being a fucking dick for no reason. Just, I mean, come on. Give the girl a fucking ice cream. You see what she's pointing at. Yeah. And then her being dejected and going in. And Fisk, like, and what I like about this is, like, Vincent D'Onofrio is Fisk. Like, he doesn't just go out and go, like, "I'm going to beat the shit out of this guy." He's like, "Maya, I've got something to take care of. I'll be right back." And when he does that, you know it's because he loves Maya, right? He's really insulted about the way she was treated and upset about that. And he does what the Kingpin does. He just beats the shit out of the guy. Like almost to death, or if not to death. And I love that. I love the way that was handled. I love how he's just like, "I need a new suit." But when she sees him, he gives a look, and this is Vincent D'Onofrio's acting here. He gives a look like, "Oh my, oh no, is this it? Is this the end of our relationship. And then when she comes over and starts kicking the guy and they take that, like, I don't know, that is, for me, if you ask me what the best part of this, that's that scene.
sorry, Rick. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ed.
Well, I was going to say is that it doesn't, not that they don't establish their relationship prior to this scene, but Jason, I agree with you. It is one of the strongest, most powerful scenes in the series, and it really does drive home what I feel is like the starting point of their relationship. And it's like you said, it shows that he genuinely does love Maya, and I do feel that that's the case. I think that the scene that we get where he finds out in episode one, where he finds out that she held her own with Daredevil, establishes her value in terms of the kingpin part, not the Fisk part, but the kingpin aspect.
Right.
And he's like, all right, I can have like a right hand, you know, person, like a henchman type thing. Like, this is my right hand here. Rick, I'm sorry, you were saying?
To stay on this scene, there were two really big things about it to me. Because Jason's absolutely right with everything he said. And one thing about this scene is D'Onofrio. Like, you know, everything's about callbacks. For me, with Batman, my favorite part of that Bruce Wayne was, like, that's American Psycho being Bruce Wayne. Like, you know, like, I associated one with the other. And with this Kingpin, when he does things like this, he's like the dude from fucking Full Metal Jacket. It's Pyle, right?
Yeah, Private Pyle.
In these scenes, he's Private Pyle in the bathroom. And the thing is, even if you're not thinking about it, your brain is making that connection. You know what I'm saying? And this scene was super heavy because of that acting, that actor, that perfect casting that Marvel's kind of known for with more than a few of its characters. And then the second thing to break the tension of all the hardcore acting is when I watched this episode, I was in an altered state and I was having thoughts from the realm. And I thought, you know what? What if Bill Burr was playing the ice cream guy and he just starts going in on this little kid?
Wow.
And that's fucking hilarious. But then the kingpin beats the shit out of him. Like, would you feel bad for Bill Burr, or would you be like, oh, come on, man, he was being funny? You could be mean if you're funny.
I mean, I don't know. I think Bill Burr there, as much as I would have gotten a kick out of it, would have kind of ruined the tension that we're talking about here. But Bill Burr can also sell you on a guy who's about to get fucking beaten to death as well. So,
but you know, Bill Burr would have killed that scene.
It just would have changed the whole tone of the scene, though. That would have been a problem.
And actually, part of what I liked about the scene, which I don't know if it would have played well after that because of the awareness of Bill Burr, but when Kingpin comes up behind this guy and just throws him in the alley, like, I love that moment because this guy's just like, noony new, and Kingpin's like, get the motherfucker. And I think you need someone who's not known. Yeah. Right? Like, you need someone who's just like a fucking guy you can just be thrown into an alley. And I think once you start affixing names to the motherfucker thrown into the alley, it kind of gets kind of murky. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, having Bill Burr there would have been very much like the Chucky series that I had watched, where they've had like SNL cast members have cameos and they always, you know, they're going to get murdered fairly quickly, and Kenan Thompson is a cab driver who gets killed by Chucky, but you kind of know that they're going on there. But it also is like, hey, there's Kenan Thompson, he's going to be funny for a second, and now he's going to get his throat slashed. So yeah, not so much. But also in this episode, though, there is also the big reveal where her grandmother, they finally have a sit down conversation and a discussion about this, and Maya starts explaining about the visions that she's having, because the grandmother's also has had these visions as well, and she explains it, that this is her, and we get it where she mentions this is your ancestors echoing through time to you, and you're getting their abilities, strategy, cunningness, things of that nature, and this is their, everyone's with you. And that's kind of like a big thing in the series, because I felt like up until this point, her powers were extremely vague. Like, I didn't really fully get what was going on with them yet, and we'll talk about that more once we wrap up the series on just overall stuff. But that is also a huge aspect of this episode. And Kingpin saying, hey, you know, I'm willing to forgive and forget everything. You know, I personally think he's also doing that because, A, yes, he does love her, but also I think he sees her as, for the Kingpin part of it, an asset. He knows that he has someone. No, Rick, am I off base with this?
I think you're off base with this.
Okay.
Because we've seen his relationship with Vanessa.
You embarrassed me in front of Vanessa.
And it was never about him, like, being married to Melania or him, you know, he didn't treat her like Miss Elizabeth and he was Macho Man. You know what I'm saying? Like, he loved her. So I think that, like, when Kingpin loves you, like, it's genuine. And I think that that's what happened with him and Echo in this series. And I think that when I rewatch Hawkeye, that scene where she shoots him in the face, it's going to mean a lot more to me because I know how much she means to him. It at least in the way that I watch the show, like when you see him be vulnerable with someone, it's always on the up and up, in my opinion. With that being said, she's absolutely an asset, but I think he sees her as, like, that's my boy, you know, like that's his ace, that's his kid, that's his prodigy. I think that it's very genuine the way what he says to her.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I'm not. I think Wilson Fisk loves her very much, and I agree with you. Like, you know, as much as when Kingpin kills you, he kills your family and everything around you. I get that part, but when he loves you. Yeah, I could agree with the Vanessa thing, but I think that's the only reason she's not dead upon arrival, sure. Because she shot him in the face.
100%. 100%.
But
the fact that Wilson Fisk loves Echo is the only reason this show exists. Because it's clear that he lived. It's clear that he could have put people around her anytime he wanted, because he does. Without her ever seeing it. Those people, mm-hmm. like when he shows up for dinner, which is another great scene in this, he's like, we haven't the dinner. And she's just like, all right, I'm going to kill you again. And the people have got like her and they put that shit in her eye. And it's really just a way for them to communicate. It's like, no, what's made clear about that is if Wilson Fisk wanted her dead, she'd be dead. He doesn't. He cares about her. He loves her. And that's genuine. And so, I think everything that happens in this shows that.
I'm going to agree with that, but I'm also going to, now that you mentioned that part, because yes, there is a scene in episode 4 where they do show that they had Sunday dinners for a while, and he shows up and he wants to have a dinner with her to basically make her the offer that she cannot refuse, you know, to just throw that in there. And I agree, that's a powerful scene, and yeah, there's the stuff in her eye where pretty much the way to explain it is there's stuff that he can see her, like there's a sign language thing that pops up. When he speaks, there's hands that do the sign language for him. Now, she questions that and stuff like that, but I also think that there is something that is touched on here. The fact that Fisk, throughout her entire life, had an interpreter at one point who he murders after he thinks that he's done with her.
That was a great scene.
Great scene there, right? Shows the, you know, how evil, you know, Wilson Fisk can be. But I think it also shows the fact, and Maya mentions this throughout the series, that, yeah, you love me and everything, but you've never learned ASL this entire time. You're hiring interpreters. We got this thing going on right now. Her entire family took the time to learn it. I mean, what do you guys think about that? Like, I don't know. I just think that the love, there is a limit to his love for her.
Well, there's a limit to his love because he's a villain, a sociopath. Like, I think he loves her in the aspects he can, but I think this the show makes it clear that that love is not real love. Like, if you ask Wilson Fisk and strapped him with a lie detector and asked, do you love Echo? He'd say yes, and he would pass it because he believes it. But that love is not the love she has of her family, and maybe that's the point, right? This whole show is about the echoes of the past, the echoes of the family. Wilson Fisk is her uncle who kills her father. He co-opted his family. And so that's the point. Like, he might love you, but doesn't love you as family really would love you. And he doesn't. He can't.
Yeah, agreed. Rick?
I think that this is a complicated character in a complicated situation. Like, Wilson Fisk is a hard man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't necessarily see him as the dad that's trying to change every diaper and, like, feed the child every bottle. And you know what I'm saying? Like, trying to soak up every one of those moments so much as he would be the dad that pays all the bills and mom doesn't have to work. And, you know, he'll make breakfast on Saturday morning and, you know, you'll see the game with him. But, you know, this isn't the dad that's going to do your homework with you and, like, kiss you on the forehead and tuck you into bed. This is a businessman. This is a gangster. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can't all code switch where they're dad at home and they're nice and they're loving and they're cool. And then they're this hard man when they go to work. So I think, like, Wilson Fisk, and when I watch him, I view him through these lenses. I think of people that I know that are businessmen that are very successful that didn't want a wife, didn't want kids because that's in the way of the money that they're planning on making and that they have made, that they've been successful at. Like, you can't shoot down progress, you know? And so I think of Wilson Fisk in the same light. So him not learning sign language, first off, Maya, her family didn't learn sign language for you. They learned sign language for your mom. So don't get a big head. you know, they all loved her mom. They let Maya go. Dude, a grandmother would never let her granddaughter go. They let Maya leave. They let her dad pack her up. They kind of told him to pack her up and take her. So this whole, like, oh, they learned sign language for me. No, they didn't. They learned it for your mother that they all loved. You're her daughter, they let you leave.
Well, they also do explain, though, that the grandmother was letting her go because of the, after her mother died in the way, in the manner that she did, she saw too much of her daughter in Maya, and it was breaking her heart on a regular basis. So they do kind of touch on that.
Another
complicated character. They touch on that?
These are things that I think we need to... Sorry, Jason. What were you saying?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go. That's all.
So they touch on that, but Maya herself combats that when she says, I was a child. I needed you. You chose yourself. So, yeah, her grandmother had her reasons for doing what she did, but even Maya's calling bullshit on it. And I think I agree with Maya. She was a child. Like, so... Yeah, I agree. I agree with Rick. I don't think she's giving them too much like credence about, like, oh, they love me, they did this. It's like, no, they kind of made some bad choices around you and made good choices around your mother. So yeah, I agree with you about that, Rick.
Right, and then the episode 4 wraps up where, you know, the question is, what's Maya going to do, you know, going forward? Like, Fisk offers her own, you know, pretty much her own everything, her own empire, because she mentions that's what she wants. Like, it's time for, you know, she mentions, says a couple of times, it's time for a queen to, you know, to arrive. And she was operating under the guise for most of this that Fisk is dead. Now it's been fully revealed that he's alive and just has a little scar in his eye. But
it's just a scratch.
minor flesh wound. I kept thinking back to Last Action Hero around this, like between the eye thing, between the more flesh wound, you know, not a big deal, that kind of thing.
This is a scratch. I think about that's Shakespeare, right?
Yes, yeah, that's Romeo and Juliet. That's Mercutio's death. Ah, tis a scratch, tis a scratch. Plague on both your houses.
You've made what is it? You've made worms food of me.
Yeah, that's it. You've made worms food of me. Very nicely done.
And then that takes us to the finale. That's episode 5 and most of the MCU shows. This is where the big throwdown happens and some wild shit that goes on. So that's kind of what going into this, I was anticipating here. But we see the Black Knife Cartel shows up. Kingpin brings them in because once he finds out that Maya's not on that plane, not getting on, he goes essentially scorched earth. I was like, fuck this. You know, everyone's going to get it now. He even, like, kidnaps the grandmother, kidnaps Bonnie. Like, it's all there.
So they're going to shoot up the fair.
You know, the whole powwow's going to get thrown. Basically taking everyone out.
They were shooting a rocket from a rocket launcher into the fair. That was the plan.
Yes.
So to touch on the rocket, once the rocket came out, Angie laughed out loud immediately. I did think that was a little ridiculous.
It's a bit much.
I'm gonna ding it for that.
That character was a bit much. Was he not weird as fucking fuck?
He was very weird. And
that's fine. His outfit in that last scene.
So by the way, just to mention, the Black Knife Cartel does have roots in the comics. They are connected to Bullseye in the comics, especially very recently. So I do wonder if that was in there for a reason. They could just be, hey, we're down with Kingpin now, and that's it. They adjusted for the MCU. Or that there is a callback, and maybe we're going to get some connection with Bullseye moving forward, because Bullseye was featured in season 3 of Daredevil very prominently. And so there is that. I'm just kind of curious, but wanted to mention that connection as well. But then there's the battle that goes on, right? Like, Echo gets her family's, you know, her suit that's made there. She gets, like, her, you know, her kind of, like, superhero suit in a way. She goes to take down Fisk, and she's kind of got, like, all the powers of her ancestors there. Her, you know, her grandmother gets powered up to her hands kind of light up, and it's this big fight, and it's, like, barn area and everything. And one of her ancestors is a healer. She uses that, you know, Maya uses that to basically makes contact with Fisk and kind of heals his pain, because we do get more flashbacks to when I was a boy.
Yeah.
You know,
we get the hammer.
Back with this. We get the hammer because she, yes. And that was something else that he issues the hammer to Maya to say, go ahead, do it. Kill me with the hammer that I killed my father with. And she kind of sees a lot of Fisk pain there. And that's where she's just kind of like, she ends up using her healing ability to kind of heal his rage. That's the way I took it. You know, his anger and his rage kind of, that seems to be driving him. And that kind of like takes the air out of him. And that's kind of how the fight ends. The big throwdown fight, that we get, I guess. I didn't love that. I mean, I'm not sure. I guess it was because I was in my mind, I was building up the big throwdown MCU finale fight scene. And I don't know. I didn't love that. I like the idea of it, but I didn't, I don't know. It just didn't play out for me well. Jason, go ahead.
I'm with you. I think anyone who was watches the show or listens to the show knows that I'm always a big component of when an MCU project ends, where the good guy or the hero outsmarts or somehow tricks the antagonist, and it's not just a balls to the wall fight, right? Like, one of my favorite like conclusions to a movie, any MCU movie, is Doctor Strange. Just fuck you. We're all stuck here forever. I got the time stone. Fuck you. I'm here to bargain, and until you're ready to bargain, we're just living in hell. Right? That's my favorite ending of any MCU movie. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I think this was not earned. That was earned. This wasn't earned. She kind of, like, gets this power last minute, everyone's echoing through me, and now I have all of this incredible power, which was never explored until now. And now I'm going to heal Wilson Fisk's, anger or trauma, whatever, until he's tapped for the next movie to be a villain, essentially, right?
And
because
we'll get to that
it's
in a minute.
Not like this, yeah, this doesn't like cure Wilson Fisk. This just is like, okay, well, you're not angry at me now. And I personally did not like it. I thought it was a cop out. I didn't think it was earned. And again, if this wasn't Wilson Fisk, where we know he's going to go on and do other villainous things in Daredevil projects, I'd be like, okay, well, she solved this issue with that. But she didn't, because he's going to be a villain again. So I personally did not like it at all.
Rick?
I really liked it. It came out of nowhere for me. I expected, I was happy we didn't have dragons fighting each other. So just thinking about the way Marvel stuff ends sometimes, I was like, please don't go super, like, supernatural right now. No dragons, no power fists.
Like, they did go supernatural, though.
We had some Iron Fist earlier in the episode, like, no more Iron Fist. But, like, I had a callback with, because, containing the post-credit scene, too, not to jump to it right now. But thinking of that scene with the post-credit scene, it reminded me of, like, Guardians when Ego, like, tells Peter, like, the whole do that to your mom thing, and fucking Peter, like, decks his dad. And, like, I forget what other film we discussed also, where we discussed the scary element of, like, fighting your father. And I think that she does see Wilson Fisk like a father, like he sees her like a daughter. And I think, like, she was like, I'm not going to fight my dad. Like, you're not even mad at me. That's how I saw that there. Like, her, like, hitting him with a little. And I agree with you guys 1,000% that I think Wilson Fisk is a villain. He's a power-hungry businessman. But I think what she did is she quelled his rage. And what's going to happen now is you're going to get a hyper-focused Wilson Fisk that is not going to have all this, like, extra dad rage, like, bubbling up in him. You know, like, the rage that loses you a war, the ego that loses you a fight, you know? I think you're going to get, in the next series, you're going to get a more focused, more powerful kingpin, a more clear-headed kingpin moving forward. That's how I took that scene.
Yeah. I like that.
I mean, I think that just, I think part of, at least my current feelings for this is I didn't love the way that this was resolved. I'm going to stand by that until the next time we see Wilson Fisk to kind of save that. But no, I'm just saying because, and whatever, we can wrap up this.
We'll be seeing him soon enough, yeah.
whenever the fuck they actually make it. But whatever, just to wrap up this part of it, they kind of go away, our family's there. She kind of like has this thing where she, has got on her motorcycle. It looks like she's going to leave, but then she kind of goes back with her family and they kind of have a nice moment at the end to wrap it up. And then that leads us to a mid-credit scene that pops up where Fisk is on his plane going back to New York and is an election for mayor going on with the incomparable Spectrum News, New York One, MCU broadcast, news reporter of all time, Pat Kiernan is featured in this because he's
right.
Everything Marvel. He is everywhere. But his voice is there. Yes, he is the true Nexus level character of the MCU because he's in Sony stuff. He's in MCU stuff. It's nuts.
Pat Kiernan is the real Watcher.
He is, right?
You find that out.
An actual Third Watcher.
Season of What If.
Yep.
You find out that he's the actual Watcher.
What if Pat Kiernan was the Watcher? Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MCU.
But Fisk sees that, but it, you know, it's mentioned on the news that, you know, like, nobody's really loving the candidates that are there. They want someone who's a brawler. They want someone who's like a bare knuckle fighter. And you can see the light bulb pop up on top of Fisk's head. And Rick, you actually, I'm gonna quote what you had mentioned from Back to the Future earlier. Mayor. That's it. I can run for mayor.
Wilson Fisk.
Which he's done in the comics. This isn't just pulled out of fucking thin air. Wilson Fisk has ran for mayor of New York City in the comics on multiple occasions. So this is definitely a thing. Now,
and as corrupt as he was, I hear he's still worse than still better than Bloomberg, actually. A little New York humor in there.
So that would lead you to believe, because that was been a lot of rumors surrounding Daredevil Born Again, is that we're going to get a Mayor Fisk in Kingpin, whether he's maybe just running for it or he is the mayor of New York City at some point in the MCU, which I think would be pretty fucking awesome if that's where they go with. Agreed. And how far do they go with this? Do they go with this in just Born Again, which from the last time we heard was going to be 18 episodes, but they've scrapped the writers since, and you know, they're kind of starting back to formula with Daredevil Born Again. But then it kind of says, is this where the next Spider-Man movie is going to go? Because there's been a lot of rumblings. Besides, I know on our Spider-Man No Way Home episode, we talked about that's kind of something we would like to see, more of a street level friendly neighborhood Spider-Man again. What do you guys think? I mean, is Kingpin going to be the big bad of the street level MCU?
I would love that.
He's going to be the Thanos. I don't know if that's what you're doing,
but I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fucking a great idea, but to see what the effects of this series has, I got to kind of see what Wilson Fisk is like going forward, because if we get when I was a boy, you know, and that's still going on, then I kind of feel like this series was, as far as the Fisk part of the arc, was pointless. If she only temporarily cured his rage and his pain. I mean, Jason, what do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, if this is a jumping off point to have a more, as Rick said, clear-headed, villainous Fisk, I'm all for it. If I don't mind having moments where he's like, you know, when I was a boy.
I'm just joking.
I don't mind that, but I think they need to be like, if you're gonna go full with Wilson Fisk after this, they need to be smaller. They need to be not as prevalent. Because if she cured him of that, then he needs to really be the focused villain we know him to be. And if they do that, I think that'd be awesome. Because I think, like, they're doing prep work to make Wilson Fisk a big bad of whatever's coming, right? And this is part of that. And actually, as mixed as I am, because I am mixed about the show. I didn't love it. We'll get to that in a minute. We're going to get to that. But I think one thing that stands out as something that I can applaud completely is the Wilson Fisk stuff and the Kingpin character work. And if they don't follow up with that, if we continue to see when I was a boy, as you said, then what are we doing here? We're just dicking around, right? But if we get rid of that, then at least the character work of Wilson Fisk in this show really pays off and gets us forward. So that's the thing about that. I hope the character work really continues forward.
Yeah. So I guess too is, we can continue to discuss in the ramifications of this show. I don't know if we're going to see Maya Lopez. I guess in one hand we could say her story did kind of, if she decided to stay in Oklahoma and kind of has her journey is done from like villain in Hawkeye to kind of like, you know, not, I would even say anti-hero. I mean, her arc could be finished here, and that's that. I think that would be more on the reception that this show ends up getting. Or, I mean, she could go back to New York and we could see her again, because we have Daredevil coming, and now that the I don't think they just haphazardly decided to canonize, you know, the Defenders saga. And if you look on Disney Plus, Echo is in this section of the Defenders saga, which I thought was an interesting point that they've had here. I mean, yes, it is.
It should connected. Be.
No, and I agree with you. I can see that, and I can see her. I can see her interacting with, you know, Matt Murdock again. With if we get Jessica Jones back, Luke Cage. Who knows if
not we, Iron Fist.
Who knows if we see. I will stand by this. I will stand by the fact that I would like to see if we did see Iron Fist again. Because remember, he exists now. Danny Rand is in the MCU officially now.
He's in Talo.
No, if they hey, if they recast. I think if you're going to bring the character back, a recasting might be a smart decision just to kind of get that taste out of people's mouths because, you know, a lot of fans did not like Iron Fist either.
I'd like to get it. You know what? That'd be a good character. Oh, we've never seen him do action pieces. I'd like seeing I know Danny Rand is white, but I wouldn't mind seeing an Asian person play that character. I feel like that'd be a cool character to drop an Asian person into. And then we get another Asian badass in the Marvel Universe.
But I kind of think that if we recast him as Asian and he has the backstory he does as being that kind of really murks up his entire arc that they said has been established already. That would be a little weird.
I have a friend at work.
It would almost be like recasting T'Challa as like Brad Pitt or something. It would be a little bit It would be weird.
T'Challa, Brad Pitt would play an excellent T'Challa, first off.
Jason, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all right. So I have a friend at work. He's my work husband. He's another English teacher. He's Asian. And he's a comic book fan. And one of his favorite characters is Iron Fist, which I didn't understand. And I said to him, we were over drinks one night, I was like, I understand. Like, Iron Fist should be an Asian character. Like, well, why are they whitewashing it? And he's like, no. Let me explain to you why it needs to be a white guy. And like, so the whole reason I'm saying this, and it is tied into his backstory. Like, as Ed said, you'd have to completely redo the character. But there are people who are, like, really, really connected to this character. And as much as I would like to see him as being an Asian character, I think it might upset the fan base a bit too much.
Well,
but you agree an Asian actor might not be bad.
No, I agree 100%. I think it should be an Asian actor, but like what I'm saying is
I don't identify as an Iron Fist fan. So thank you for sharing that.
Neither do I.
I can see the other side of the coin now.
I'm sorry, Jason. Go ahead.
No, it's because I'm not an Iron Fist fan either, but there are out there, and and I just wanted to point out that even the Asian ones feel some Asian people who are fans of Iron Fist feel he should be white because of his backstory, which, you know, I prefer an Asian guy though. But I'm sorry, go ahead, Ed.
Well, no, I mean, I was just gonna say, and I know Rick, we've had this conversation before, is that when Iron Fist first dropped, you know, the first public outcry was, oh, they're whitewashing this character and stuff like that. And it's just like, no, because he's kind of him being a white, rich white dude does tie into his entire story. Like, it's not one of those characters where you're just kind of like, yeah, obviously anyone can change that. It's actually tied into, his whole story. And now with the MCU that you've had two seasons of Iron Fist and Defenders, so now we've had three series, including Danny Rand and his backstory as a rich white dude at one point, what is very much established, to suddenly flip the script. And then you would ask the Asian recasted character, hey, when you were a white dude and you were, you know, this and that, you create a lot of bizarre storylines here. So
Bruce Lee's half white. Be fine.
Yeah, but
anyway,
exactly. It would be very bizarre, but.
It would be bizarre to switch a character that actor who's already so, like you said, he's already pretty dug in. If we're going to say the defenders of a thing, he's one of the defenders.
Yes. Now, if you want to recast the actor for someone who resembles the guy, but actually wants to do fight choreography. You know, that's where I would go with that. Someone who actually wants to put in the work, because that is one of my knocks on Iron Fist, right? A lot of people complain, like, if he's supposed to be this incredible martial artist, kind of, yeah, kind of a tough sell. But then we find out there was a lot of behind the scenes issues with him not wanting to put in the work for that. So I think to A, get fixed that issue, and B, unless he is at a point in his career where he's like, I'll put in the work, just bring me back. Okay. But I also think recasting the character could help with getting that bad taste out of the mouth, because a lot of people who are fans of the Defenders saga, they just always go right to Iron Fist, even though other shows in the Defenders saga did have some issues, like the second season of Luke Cage, as long as we love Mike Coulter, not great. It has some issues with it. It's just not the second season of Jessica Jones. I don't particularly love, but the first and third seasons, I am a big fan of, especially season one. So all three seasons of Daredevil
is my favorite of all of those. I think I've said that.
Yeah. And I can understand that. I'm not even going to debate you on it, as much as I feel Daredevil seasons one, all three seasons of Daredevil I loved. One and three, I think, were better than two, even though two is when we get the introduction to Punisher and we get Elektra. But they're all strong. But I think one and three are just a little stronger. And both seasons of Punisher I enjoyed also. But remember, that's also, now that this is canonized, we can get John Bernthal back as Frank Castle. And don't forget the last time we saw him at the end of season two. He had the whole skull body armor. He was fucking full on Punisher in that last clip. And I'm like, come on, give me more. Because we all knew it was getting canceled at that point.
He's going to be awesome in Secret Wars.
That would be... I think us seeing Echo in with like some further Defenders stuff, I do think that's where her home is. Like, I can kind of see that as being a good thing. That's where I think we could see her again. Or if they're like, hey, we're writing her out, you know, her arc is ended. I can kind of see it both ways. Personally, if I had to pick, though, I would like to see her again, you know, pop up in Defenders stuff. Daredevil Born Again. I'm sure they'll announce a Punisher series at some point, and we'll see if we can get, you know, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage back and everything.
What if they don't use Elektra in Born Again, and then they just use her as his love interest? Because she was his love interest in the comic book. She's a good-looking chick. Like,
no, I mean,
Matt Murdock's got game.
Well, yeah, like, we established that, Matt Murdock. I mean,
but what if they just don't use Elektra in Born Again, and then they just use her?
I think almost anyone except Peggy Carter is on the table for Matt Murdock.
Captain Carter might be on the table, though.
Look, well, it's true, actually. They need to give Peggy Atwell at least like 30 hours of screen time a year. She might just show up because they owe her. I mean, I think she sold her soul to Mephisto for this job.
So I guess overall thoughts on the series. I think it's the last in live action MCU series we saw was Secret Invasion. I definitely think Enko was better than that. I agree with kind of Jason though. I think I enjoyed it. I was entertained the whole time. I was fully invested in the character. Kingpin stuff was great. I think I'm gonna try to make sure I'm there. Alakwa Cox, who plays Maya Lopez, I think she does a phenomenal job in the role of Maya Lopez. Vincent D'Onofrio, of course, crushes his Kingpin every fucking time we see him. He's great. I think the family is great. It kind of is somewhat the
supporting characters
were all pretty strong. I do think that some of the writing could have been better at times. I think there was a lot of potential for a better establishment of her and her grandmother. I think they could have went into that a little bit more, explaining her powers, exactly what they are. I think is another area that was lacking a bit. But you had mentioned if this was supposed to be six episodes, I don't know. I mean, you cut it down to five now. I mean, I don't know what was cut. I mean, we heard rumblings a while ago that this series was labeled unwatchable and it was awful. And then I'm sure they retweaked it to, you know, fine tune it a little bit, probably. I think that's evident. It kind of looks like maybe some tuning up was done. So I don't know. I think it's a strong series. I will say that the tone of it got me pretty well, because it feels like it's a perfect bridge between the Defenders saga and the MCU Disney Plus series, if that makes sense, right?
Like, I think, can you imagine how hard that is to do?
It is, and it was being sold as a Defenders level series. I don't think we get to that level of darkness, but I think there's an interesting balance between the two. So I would recommend, hey, if you're all in with us, like the MCU, it's not a waste of your time. Go check it out. If you liked Hawkeye and you liked the character of Echo in Hawkeye, check this out. If you're a Daredevil fan, the Defenders saga fan, I would recommend checking this out. Jason, what do you got?
So I'm overall with this. I'm kind of torn. I think some of it really works well and some of it doesn't. I think the problem, part of the problem I have is the fact that she was introduced in Hawkeye makes me compare it to Hawkeye. This is very much a Hawkeye companion piece, and I just enjoyed Hawkeye more. Yeah, and I think this is also very different than Hawkeye. Like, I think tonally it's doing different things, and so the fact that it's kind of like so close together kind of threw me off. Things I liked about it, I love the Kingpin stuff. I love the Native American stuff, the family stuff. I love those side characters. Biscuits was funny. I love her uncle who owns the roller skate rink. And as much as it was ridiculous when that guy pulled out the rocket launcher, like, the payoff of that, where the uncle just fucking shoots him, yeah, and the guy looks at him like, did you just shoot me and fuck me up? He's like, yeah, that's right, I did. Like, I like that. I thought that was cool. Again, Vincent D'Onofrio is fantastic. I think he steals the show in this. It's funny because I like the actress who plays Maya, and I know that because I thought she was awesome in Daredevil. But I just don't think she has the charisma to carry a show.
Okay.
Like, I liked her, and I liked her in Daredevil a lot. Not Daredevil, you know what I mean. I liked her in Hawkeye a lot. But she's carrying this show, and a lot of her thing is just like, I'm tough. And, you know, there's some break in that, and I appreciate that. But I found the side characters had more charisma than she did, and I was more interested in the side characters, and that detracted for me. So that was like my thing. Is it worth checking out? Absolutely. Is it better than Secret Invasion? Yeah, because Secret Invasion sucked at the end. Like, it really fucked things up. This is consistently good. It's just it has high points and has low points, and I think it all depends on what you come into this for. You know, but yeah, is it worth checking out? Yes, absolutely. Go check it out, and especially if you like this character in Hawkeye, and especially if you like Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin.
Rick?
Yeah, I mean, you guys kind of nailed it. This, I agree with everything you guys said, and to be honest, this conversation made me like the series a little bit more. Like, I'm like looking at a couple of things differently than I did before. And my approach to a lot of this comic book stuff now, and it's not just Marvel, it's everyone. It's, you guys know, I love art. I love painting. And one of my favorite artists is Jean-Michel Basquiat. Now, he's not for everyone, but if you're a fan of his, almost everything he does is for you. Now, with his artwork, like, you can run into it in the most random places, and it could be something you've never seen, and it'll be like a piece of OSB board with like some red paint and like a weird character drawn in a pencil on it. And it might mean nothing to most people, but if you're a fan of his, you've just discovered something you've never seen, and it's a big deal. So a lot of times I approach these like properties the same way. And with this series, I really wish it was 6 episodes and not 5. I wish we had one more 45-minute episode that explained her origin with these alien ground dwellers that give her powers, and also goes into Wilson Fisk's eye. And, like, you know, I wish we had one more episode that would have helped maybe smooth things a bit more over. Because, like Eddie said, it was deemed unwatchable, and then they did what they did, and they put it out. And the three of us, I think we enjoyed it. Like, there's things we could nitpick at, but we don't regret watching it. Like, shit, have you seen us when we're really watching something we don't like? Exactly. It gets bad.
Yeah.
So I think
we can get back to the Transformers episodes.
Exactly. Yeah. Go right there. 15 minutes of that. You know? But, like, this was not that. This was another corner of the Marvel Universe we don't get to see anymore. We thought we'd never see anymore. The Defenders, you know? We get Daredevil. We get the connection with Hawkeye. D'Onofrio is fucking amazing. And I hope I'm with you guys. Next series, I just want to see a Kingpin, like, with no emotions. Like, I want him to be clear-headed and focused on his goals. And I want a Kingpin that does whatever he's got to do. You know, I don't want him, I love you, forgive me. No, I want to see a Kingpin that gets the job done. I want to see a Thanos level, like, I love you, Gamora, but I'm going to need this fucking stone. Like, that's the Kingpin I want to see moving forward. My optimism from last show, where I was like, oh, we're in good hands. Like, they have all these comics to choose from. Like, this series kind of reaffirmed my optimism. Did it have issues? Absolutely. Let me design that one episode, that one 45-minute episode, and I'll fit it in between 2 and 3, and the series will make perfect sense and flow nicely. But it'd be cool to see the character again. I'm sure she'll be back again. I don't think they developed her and gave her a series to not use her again. But it gave me hope for the future. I feel like the people at Disney are working hard. The people at Marvel are working hard. And they're just trying to give us a good product. I don't think this is a polished turd. I think that this is a good product. It's not WandaVision. It's not Loki. It's whatever's below that.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree. I would not put it on the level of WandaVision or Ms. Marvel. I'm one who's not a huge fan. I liked Loki season 2 more than season 1. I'd say I disliked season 1, but I thought 2 was stronger and in ways made season 1 stronger when you look at them as a whole. I agree with you. I want to follow up on your comment about the episode thing. We've seen that, we've heard the stuff, right? Like, Marvel is kind of learning how to do TV shows now. And unfortunately, it's been on-the-job training because the former head of Disney, when Bob Iger was retired for a couple of years, Bob Chapek was like, no, Disney Plus is the goal. They're the cash cow moving forward. Everybody, content, content, content. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And we don't, quality control be damned. We just need content for Disney Plus. That's our main focus moving forward. And now Bob Iger is back. Kevin Feige also was stripped of his power kind of with the MCU during the Chapek era. Now he's kind of he's back in charge fully now. That's where I can see some of the tweaking, and that's where, like, hey, these 6-episode things not really working for us. We're going to get a showrunner. We're going to start making our TV shows how TV shows are supposed to be made, and the pacing of TV shows are not movies. They're completely different, and the advantage to TV shows is you can flesh out things and take things time to explore details, because, Rick, you also watch Reacher. In an investigation, details matter.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we hear. That's one of the quotes there. So details matter. And that's the thing. I'm knocking with some of the shows. And this is that if you have a full fleshed out, and Rick, maybe you talked about it, 10 between 10 and 15 episode season, maybe. Maybe even 8 and 10 or 12 or some. That number of sweet spot is around there somewhere. You can flesh things out and properly address things where some of the MCU shows have felt rushed, I think, at times. And Jason, I feel like we've mentioned this before about other the six episode thing is just not. They can be so much better if they were just a little bit longer.
Yep. Right?
Think about the final episode of Game of Thrones. What if that was a 10 episode season?
Oh, now Jason can get that reference. Now he's just like, yeah, Jason is Captain America. Oh, I got that reference. I mean, right? Like, that's kind of like what it is. So I do think they could benefit from that. I just don't know when that begins. Like, the other live action show that we got coming this year is Agatha. I think the latest name is Covenant of Chaos, or I don't know. They changed the title of that, but it's a WandaVision spinoff that's focusing on Agatha Harkness, which should be cool. We love, you know, again, I feel like the Echo was greenlit because people liked her in Hawkeye. So let's go. Agatha, she gets her own series because people loved her in WandaVision. And that was that. I'm curious to see. I don't see Kevin Feige necessarily making that choice going forward for content purposes. Not saying they can't be good, but I'm curious to see where this.
I'd have rather had a She-Hulk season 2.
And hey, we might get it, but again, She-Hulk, when we find out, was kind of like a half-baked idea, and then we find out there were production problems behind that. But now if we get a She-Hulk season 2, I would be curious to know under Kevin Feige now, what do we get? And it's done as a regular TV show. I think there's optimism for that kind of stuff. It's there. But yeah, I would like to see the character again, and I'm just curious. I just don't know, like you mentioned, when the hell we are going to see Kingpin go for mayor, because Daredevil might come out in 2025. Maybe?
Spider-Man versus Kingpin is going to be a while. Shit.
Yeah, I am really all about, and I hope the rumors that are online are true, that the next Spider-Man movie is supposed to feature Daredevil in it. And they're fighting the Kingpin. I would fucking love that. You could even have an Echo cameo in Spider-Man for all I care.
That
Fuck
would
it.
Be awesome.
You know what, too? Since we're discussing Spider-Man, I'm not so sure he doesn't get the symbiote in the next movie. I'm not saying he's going to be like black suit Spider-Man in the next film, but I'm pretty sure he's going to get the suit in the next film. Of the symbiote, at least.
See, listen, that was set up, and we talked about that, right? Like, at the end of No Way Home. That was set up, and I'm assuming that's going to get paid off, but if we're talking street-level neighborhood Spider-Man, I don't know. I feel like the alien symbiote, he can kind of take a break from the alien thing. Maybe in a post-credit scene he gets it, or I don't know, something like that. I also stand by what I wanted in the Raimi trilogy. I want Peter to have that suit for a whole movie. I want to see that developed and earned, where he has that heel turn and, you know, he's pissing people off and he's really getting violent. Like, that's what I would like to see.
If he gets it in the next movie, Reed Richards can help him take it off.
Agreed.
Interesting.
But I don't know. I kind of, after the thing is, like, the original, the trilogy we've got right now, it is very Spider-Man high level alien, like, or not really alien stuff, but like in the third, well, things got really sci-fi in No Way Home, and he's seen in Infinity War and Endgame and stuff like that. I really do want to see him street level Spider-Man. I kind of want to see them scale the scope of it back a bit. I would love to see him and Matt Murdock team up in the next movie. Again, maybe a little Echo cameo, if that's what it is, but they're taking on the Kingpin. That's what I would want, personally, if I had to pick one. As much as I would love the Black Suit Saga to begin, I kind of want this first, personally.
So... before we wrap, I want to let you guys know that I took Jason's word and I did Ricky's grab bag of four random comic books.
Oh boy.
Now, these are not as bad as you think that they would be. Next week, they probably will be. But this week's are pretty solid. These are all, and I want to only show inherited comics. So not something that I picked out myself, something I inherited and enjoyed. So the first one, Marvel Team Up. Two of my favorite guys.
You fucking love Marvel Team Up, man.
Marvel Team Up is the greatest. Second runner up, in 80s, four-issue miniseries starring Iceman.
You've got an Iceman comic book.
Yeah.
Who the fuck has an Iceman comic book? That's awesome.
Another one, one of my favorite covers of all time. Hobgoblin kicking some spidey ass with Norman underneath.
That's nice. I think I have that one actually.
You supposedly this is worth some bread. This is my copy, this is beat to shit. And then last but not least, Phoenix. Fighting Leisure Suit Beyonder.
Oh boy!
So we got a good, good shot. Actually, look at this.
That's a good beautiful. Shot.
Captain America in a top hat.
Wow!
Oh look! Cap's gonna start a Broadway show. Little did they know they were gonna do a Broadway show about Cap.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh boy.
Rogers the Musical.
This is why I love digging through old issues. Listen, people, if you want to collect comic books, don't worry about value. Buy what you want to read. And don't worry about condition. Read what you want to read, buy what you want to read.
Well, I would suggest, I mean, from personal experience, the Marvel app, Marvel Universe app, you can go ahead and really don't have to worry about it or storing it. You can just read it on your iPad or something like that. Yeah. But no, there's value to the old school. I do walk into some, like, you know, smoke shops and things like that that you'll see, or old school, like, I don't know, what the hell is it called? I don't know. I'd even say bodegas. They're like small newsstand type things. I will see old comics on racks there still, and it kind of warms my heart to see that.
Nice.
There's one on Union Turnpike right over there.
I'd always pick one up then, if that was me at it. Depending on what they're charging, you're in New York. If I was in Florida, we're talking different prices.
Next time I go to Cobblestone and I got after a few beers, I'll take a walk over there.
There you go. Then you got to show us what you got.
Exactly. I'll just grab four random issues and then we can see what happens. Yeah. Hopefully, if they're like a dollar, then absolutely. All right, cool. So I think that kind of just pretty much wraps it up for us this week. Thanks for joining us, as always. If you join us on the Facebook live stream, sure to check out Grandy's PC's Facebook group, where we share a lot of random stuff and on the page, a lot of trailers and stuff like that. I think we might be getting a new trailer for Hypes Jason up for Madam Web soon, so we'll see.
Yeah.
And some photos.
Madam Web.
Fucking Web.
If you're checking us out on YouTube, at Pop Culture Pros, go ahead and follow, subscribe to Pop Culture Pros. That's where we are presented by PopCulturePros.com. If you're checking us out on X, you can go ahead and follow at Pop Culture Pros. And if you're checking out us on the audio-only podcast, Pop Culture Pros. We got a lot of cool stuff on the network. We'll be back next week. We were doing some discussions on where we're going to take this, because we don't really have any new movies until February.
Where are we going?
And
we're going to the realm.
Oh no, I think we are, because I this whole Defenders saga being canonized kind of got me thinking and jonesing, and I kind of clicked past Punisher Warzone on TV the other night, and I changed it because it was going to give me nightmares, and I put on Nightmare on Elm Street instead. I think it's time that we get to some more 2000s Marvel movies.
Good stuff.
All right, because we've dabbled in this before, but we haven't gone full in. We've done Fantastic Four. We've talked about Ang Lee's Hulk. We've done Blade, but there's a couple of movies that have kind of escaped us, and we're gonna get to, because they're Defenders related. So. And we have Masters of the Universe Revolution coming up in 2 weeks, but we got some time to pepper in some stuff. Next week, What do you guys think? Do we go Daredevil with Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner? And then we do a comparison versus the director's cut? Then we follow it up the week after with Elektra? Or do we go to Thomas Jane's Punisher and then Ray Stevenson's Punisher Warzone after that? Punisher or Daredevil?
I think I speak for everyone involved, including the audience, when I say we need to go to Punisher first.
This guy wants to scrape at the door.
Wow. Okay.
Here's the thing. The choice is Thomas Jane's Punisher versus Daredevil. All right, that's comparable. They're both fine.
Do you want me to punch you in the nuts or to kick you in the nuts?
Exactly. Then you have Punisher Warzone versus Elektra. I've never seen Elektra. I like Jennifer Garner. I'm in the middle of an Alias rewatch. So that's not, I'm actually kind of excited to watch it.
Like, I think you're going to like Elektra. I think you're going to like Elektra.
I might. But Punisher Warzone, guys, this may be the craziest, campiest thing we've ever done, and we have done Ghost Rider 2. I think Warzone, we got to go the Punisher.
Beyond that.
Yeah.
So Warzone's beyond Ghost Rider 2.
So for those listening, Jason, yeah, has not seen Punisher Warzone.
Nope.
All right. And he has not seen Elektra. Now, Punisher Warzone, more exciting than Elektra. Leave it at that.
If you like seeing people pop like a bubble,
things happen in
who doesn't
at a very rapid rate. Okay, and I don't. I'm trying to like not spoil things. I did send you guys a clip, which Rick was there in a movie theater, and we saw that when that happened.
Oh yeah, I want Jason to not watch a trailer. Just sit down and watch the movie.
And I didn't watch that clip you sent because you know I don't watch. I don't watch any. Spoilers.
Watch the clip after you watch the movie.
I will, but I know I'm going to watch this movie. I don't want any spoilers. I want to go in fucking completely blind because that's the way you're going to get the best response from me.
All right, so then it is settled. Join us next week for Thomas Jane starring as Frank Castle in The Punisher, where John Travolta is the villain of some sort, and Kevin Please Nash and Rebecca off. Romaine Please Stamos?
Off.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait,
a very bizarre movie.
But Ed, I'm gonna have to insist that we find also the that like Punisher doing laundry short
at some point. Oh yes, Dirty Laundry. Punisher movies. Yes,
we have to look at that.
That's next week. We will do next week. Yeah. It's Thomas Jane, so whatever. Punisher and Dirty Laundry, which is no. Listen, that thing is great.
The name of the episode it is. Should be Dirty Laundry.
Yes. All right, so that's what we're taking it next week then. All right, well, enjoy your week. We'll post it when we decide on a date, and we'll see you then. Peace.
Later.